Like, it's very common in agriculture to over-apply an NPK fertilizer to make up for another deficiency like calcium, another deficiency like one of the trace nutrients.
There seems to be a deficit of conversations around the whys of living away from the convenience of town, spending precious time on trying to grow your own food when you can just buy it in the shops, and if choosing this lifestyle really is making a difference on our characters and that of our families. Welcome to the Cultivate Podcast. We are passionate about and love having conversations on what impact truly experiencing country living, true education, and agriculture can have on our lives. We hope and pray that by us sharing these conversations with people from all different backgrounds and experiences, that you can feel equipped from the practical advice and inspired by the stories to continue or pick up where you left off. Hey guys, super excited to be back this week with the Cultivate Podcast. And today we're going to do one of our series on the basics. And so today we are talking about bed prep. And I don't know, I think it's just cool talking about gardening and agriculture in general. I hope everyone else who's listening enjoys talking about these things, because we definitely enjoy talking about it. And so we're going to get straight into it. Guys, what is a testimony or an experience of bed prep that you have seen or experienced yourself? Yeah, what are some things you've seen? I'm sure you've seen a few things.
Yes, so when I was in college, I had the blessing of being able to experiment with how I make beds. I can remember one time we were making beds in the greenhouse, and I felt like I had to remove every single root that was from the previous crop out of the bed. I had to like take every single thing out of it so then I could, you know, put my new crop in there. So that was one experience. Now I'm not so they call it obsessive compulsive weeder, I guess, obsessive compulsive bed prepper. But it's a balance.
And so how did that go for you, Khan? Did you end up like planting anything that season or?
Yeah, we planted the kale into those beds. But, you know, it's just like, do you really want to spend an hour trying to take out every little organic piece of organic matter in a bed, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and I think the first time I started with the idea of trying to grow my own garden, I did the exact same thing. And I spent so much time just pulling every single green thing out of the dirt and turning it over and making sure it looked nice just because I wanted it to look nice. I remember that season getting so overwhelmed that I ended up not planting as much as I was planning because it was all just too much. So there's definitely, a place to not be so pedantic. But then again, this last season when I was preparing to plant and grow, there's a lot of nut grass in the area.
Yeah,
I feel like if I had have left all the nut grass there, mm-hmm. that would have gone bad as well.
That's so another it's like, story.
Mm-hmm. What are the key things to pull out? Yeah, what are the key things to pull out? What are the things that are actually okay to leave and are actually organic matter that's going to help the plants grow and keep the soil fresh? So there's a balance there. Hey, what about you, Ian?
Yeah.
I feel like you've probably got some other things to add as well.
Yeah, I'll add another angle, but it just shows that bed prep, there's some really important things and there's some things that are not important. And so it's like this whole learning process of trying to work out what's important and then doing those things for wherever you're out. And, you know, if that was important for you, you know, the nut grass or a type of grass that needs to come out. I had another example. I went and visited a client and we were in this greenhouse and it was about, they had prepped it and fed it up with, I can't quite remember what. And then they planted these tomatoes in the greenhouse and they were all trained up strings, and you know it was looking really, really pretty. But in about middle of the season, it just crashed. Like all the plants started getting covered in disease and pests and like little flies and mites and every imaginable disease just came in a huge wave and just took over the whole greenhouse. And they're like, "Whoa, what's going on? Like this is extreme. This is not just normal. You know, a little bit of disease here and there. It's like, why did that whole entire thing just crash?"
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. And I went and gave them a visit and we had a chat and we had a look and we kind of realized, well, hang on a minute. This soil that you planted in is really salty. You could like see the salt on the surface of the soil, like shining, like crystals, white crystals on the top of the soil, and which tells you that there's a lot of salt in it. And so when we measured it and had a look, it was like, whoa, it's really salty. And so the plants were really stressed out. And so therefore they couldn't take nutrients up properly. They couldn't take water up properly. And so they were so stressed that every disease imaginable could grow on them, basically. So because they were weak, right? Then we realized, well, hang in a minute, at bed prep, something needed to be done. You know, this had to be dealt with before planting. And so, you know, then during winter, they in the greenhouse, they would flood it and or put a lot of water out and let that water drain out and wash out the salts and clean the soil so that it's actually ready for the next season. So it's just like recognizing that that was really important for them in their situation.
Yeah. And I think bed prep is really a season of preparation. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's crazy because, like, I don't know about you guys, but the whole idea of forward thinking and like planning ahead, like growing up, I was never really good at that until, yeah, a couple of experiences I've gone through and realizing, you know, without foresight, things can go really bad. And so this is a stage of, yeah, being in that mindset of, okay, what could go wrong in the future? What can I do now to eliminate that and help things succeed, correct?
Yeah. The majority of crops fail due to bad bed prep, a bad start. If you get the start right, if you get the early preparation right, you set yourself up for a good season for the rest of the season. It pretty much sets the stage for the rest of the crop's life, you know? If you think of it as a child, you know, what happens to them in their first development years pretty much set them up for the rest of their life. It's exactly the same, but in a lot shorter time frame for us. It's one season. The way we set that soil up at the beginning of the season determines basically how the crop and everything is going to go through to the end.
Yeah, I really like that. Yeah, the visualization there of that. So we talked about two things of, you know, how many weeds do we need to get out and how clean does the soil need to be before we start planting? And then the other thing is, you know, what is the soil type? Is there too much salt in the soil? Is there too much whatever might be in there that could be causing issues? Is there anything else we should be considering in this preparation stage?
So there's quite a few principles of things that basically is asking, what are the problems we need to look at? What are the issues with this soil? What are the critical things that need to be fixed when we're entering a season is really the big question.
Yeah, that's the overarching elephant in the room.
Another really important reason to get bed prep right just from the beginning is just to have it laid out, beds of a certain size in a way that's convenient for you. You know, there's obviously different systems out there. Typical marker garden system will be a 75 centimeter wide bed with a 25 centimeter footpath, you know, and they've done that just because it's very ergonomically friendly to reach over a small bed. But, you know, I've got a tractor, for example, and so therefore that forms a bed of 1.1 meters and then I have to allow 40 centimeters for tractor wheels. So that's it. That's my bed width and footpath width.
Right. So you really want to get that from the beginning, making sure that you understand the layout of your bed. It's going to help you because you don't want to be making more work for yourself than you don't need to.
Yeah. And if you set it up in a way that doesn't suit you, for example, you're working with small tools and you make really wide beds, well, then it's really hard to reach the middle of that bed with the hand tools because it's kind of, you know, wide beds were made pretty much for tractors. You'd rather have a small bed and you really kind of don't mind to have a small footpath because you've got to maintain that footpath free of weeds. So it's sort of like more suitable to make that in a smaller way. So the 25 centimeter and the 75 centimeter width bed. And to go a step further, if, you know, it really helps, what if like all your beds are the same length, you know? So when you put your drip line on one bed and then you take it off and then you go into the shed and next year you want to put it out the drip line again, it doesn't matter which coil of drip line you pick up because they're all cut to the same length because all your beds are the same length and all your, you know, if you use netting to cover the beds, you know, they're all the same length, cut out and ready to go. You don't have to, every bed is a different length and I need to remake all my irrigation fittings every time.
Right. So you're saying that basically we need to have a standard even before we go ahead and start digging out the soil or start preparing our beds. We need to figure out on a piece of paper. And once you've figured all that out, then you get to work, right?
Yeah. Look, you don't have to, but it's going to make life easier.
Do your research, find out exactly what the normal sizes are for tractors in your area. I mean, if you, most tractors will differ slightly. Exactly. So
whatever combination of tractor and rotary hoe that you're using, et cetera. Yeah. And there's a really good book on this. It's called The Market Gardener by Jan Martin Forterre. Okay, I butchered his name, but we'll put a link. It talks about the bed prep and in terms of what's the, you know, how wide, why, and what spacing of crops I can then do in that. You know, there are standards and of how to do that, of how to space the crops out. So if I've got a 75 centimeter bed, how do I, you know, plant all the different types of crops in that kind of a bed? And so that's all been kind of worked out. So yeah, there's that great book. So we're going to put that in the description somewhere.
That's great. Yeah. You have uniformity in your beds. Especially, I think it's important if you have to consider cultivation, which we're going to talk about soon. And we have to have a standard of cultivation if you're going to use hand tools, like you said, or if you're going to use tractors.
Yeah, having that protocol. So every time you come in and prep a bed, it's not like a new discovery. It's like a repeat, press the repeat button so you're not thinking about it so much.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing I've learned in farming is that experimentation is not necessarily a good idea, you know. when you're doing farming, experimenting and running your farm in an experimental way is a good way to waste your time. Learn from other people's mistakes.
Yeah, we need to experiment in order to learn, but we still need to be doing at least 80% of stuff that we know works. Yeah. You know,
I like that.
There's an 80-20 rule. Like you're doing 80% of stuff that you know, and you're only stretching yourself with the 20% rather than experimenting with everything. And of course, at the beginning, we experiment with everything because we haven't got a clue what we're doing. But, once you get into it, then you can sort of, you get this protocol happening and you know what to do next season without inventing the wheel. We've got to talk about what are those principles of bed prep, which then form the foundation for like, what's the protocol? What are the reasons for why I prep my beds, my soil in so-and-so way? Because every place and location needs their way of doing it. So you can't just say, hey, the way I prep a bed, everyone else should prep a bed, because every different place is different, right? And the soils are different and the location is different. And so to make a rule of this is how it's done doesn't really work. You need to have the understanding of why, what your soil needs, what prep it needs.
That's true. What is the first principle of bed prep, would you say?
So, yeah, one of the first requirements is, where is my soil in regards to, is it compacted? Is it holding, or what's the rooting depth? Like can the vegetable actually root in to what depth? What's the water like in it? And so basically those are things that we adjust in a sense with tillage and or breaking up the soil. So how much do I need to break my soil up is a really first question. If I'm starting with a soil that's naturally, if this was a new plot, you know, it's going to probably be compacted and you're going to need to break that up. We're going to need to make it soft in an environment that is easy to root in. If it's got, obviously, if it's really hard, if you can't put the shovel in it, why would the root grow through it? And also if the shovel can't go through it, how fast is the water entering that soil? Is it entering it and staying moist so that obviously there's enough access to water by the crop? So if there's
any
issue there, then you can expect those problems down the line. Well, actually, there was compaction and the roots only went in 5 centimeters, and then the top 5 centimeters dried out really quickly, and then my crop was really stressed. And actually, of course, we have a failure.
So it's about helping the soil to retain moisture. And part of that is to break up the soil during acceptable tillage. So then it'll be a good growing medium.
Yeah. Khan, when would you raise the bed? Because like this is part of it, this area of watering compaction and stuff. When would you raise your bed, or when would you just leave it the same, or even maybe make it a ditch?
Yeah, well, it depends on what type of soil you have, of course. If your soil has troubles with draining, then you're in a good situation to raise your beds. For example, if you have a very heavy soil, heavy clay soil, and your soil is constantly wet, or poor drainage, then you have to consider making raised beds, which is going to help considerably. Now, if you're soil is very loamy, sandy, or loamy clay, then you can consider just leaving, how did you put it now?
Loamy, sandy, just flat.
Yeah, just flat, yeah. You don't necessarily have to raise it. You just leave it flat, yeah.
Yeah, which is a lot less work than having to mound these up all the time.
Exactly, yeah. You just take out the vegetation. Don't have to keep mounding it up.
And I know actually in Africa, you guys would do a little bit more of a sunken bed.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Especially in the arid areas where the water is very scarce, then they usually will dig out the soil in the middle of the bed and bring it to the sides, which would create like a basin around the sides, and they would plant the crops and that soil that's in the middle left over.
Yeah, yeah. Basically getting that moisture to sit, to go down and sit longer in the bed, in the root zone, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So there's different ways of thinking that a lot of people here have.
So when have you seen like compaction issues in your beds, Gun?
Well, compaction is usually caused by a bed not being used, for one. If you forget to plant in a certain area for a while, that what happens to the soil is that it tends to go hard because the water, especially if you're in an area with heavy rains, will come down and make the soil compacted. And also if you're constantly standing on the soil, that causes it to be compacted too, you know, for obvious reasons.
So it gets pretty hard and we've got to kind of come in, and if we've left it for a while, we definitely have to come in and do something about it.
Yeah, that's right. In order for it to be usable again, you have to lift the soil, aerate the soil, so then there can be a fine tilt again.
Commonly, what I would see in compaction issues is they've tilled and made it all very nice and soft with a rotary hoe for the top 20 centimeters. And after that, it's a brick.
Mm-hmm.
It goes really, really hard underneath. And that can be a problem, obviously, because then the roots stop there and the drainage is not going down because you've got this compaction. You want to soften that or break that up and not just create another hard compaction layer even lower. So I think that takes us a little bit in the next step of really what stops the soil from just going and becoming concrete again. You know, what is it, just us coming in and tilling that keeps a soil soft, or you know, is it something that we're putting in? You know, well, what are we putting in at that time, at that tillage? What are we putting in that changes it so it doesn't reset back to a rock?
Yeah. And I would say also to add on to that is that nature has a perfect way of combating this problem, you know?
Like
if you look in nature and see what the soil is like, if you go into like a forest or something like that and you dig around in the ground, you know, I can uncover the layer of organic material on the top. And what do you find underneath? Like a nice black looking loamy soil, which was happening over time. That doesn't happen in like a day. You know, it takes time for good soil to occur. So if you add to the soil, you know, what it needs and look after the soil once you've tilled it, then you know, you don't have to spend all your time tilling it and wasting all your energy, you know, weeding it, then it just manages itself in a way.
Yeah. A bed should get better and better every year by you using it, because the organic material that you might be adding, but even if you're not, like all the roots that grow into that soil, they are organic matter in themselves, and they're creating air spaces, building the soil. And so they are creating a structure, if you like, to the soil that stops it from going back to a brick by being that air inside.
Yeah. So I think this is another important principle, you know, of using mulch on your beds, making sure that it's covered, and adding the organic material that your beds need.
Yeah. Especially in lighter soils.
Mm.
Like in a heavy clays can, they call it self-mulching. But it's not totally true, but there's an element of the weather does not affect them to a depth so quickly and so easily. But like a light soil really benefits from that cover, that protection, that blanket over it. Like in a heavy soil, there you can have a lot more influence with putting in gypsum or lime. You can have a lot more effect. Whilst in a light soil, that doesn't have so much effect in terms of making it aerated and fluffy.
So what else? What else can we say is a very important principle when preparing a bed?
I guess it might be a bit of a given, but what are we feeding? What are we putting in? What does that crop or what does that soil need in order to perform right?
Okay. So yeah, you have those different elements, right, that a crop definitely needs. And in order for it to grow and be fruitful, the soil, that's where we have to start. We have to start in the soil and make the soil right. Because if you have bad soil, then naturally you're going to have bad plants as well. So tell us a bit more about that, mate.
Yeah, well, in terms of nutrients, you know, there's a couple of groups, but we just touched on lime and gypsum, right? And it's the first sort of group of your calcium and your magnesium. And when you apply lime or gypsum, you're applying calcium, essentially. When you apply dolomite, for example, you're applying calcium and magnesium. But the point being is when you put that into your soil, it causes it, especially like we're saying, heavy soil, which has got a lot of clay, it causes that clay to be, the big word for it is flocculate, which means basically it becomes separated. The clay has air gaps between it because this calcium causes it to pop out and stay separate. So you have all this extra airspace in the soil, which gives it that fluffiness. So it doesn't reset and harden down into a very dense, compact soil.
So you're saying that basically those components help to make sure the soil doesn't return back to its state. Those original states.
Yeah, that's it. So if you've got to do a lot of work on your compaction, you've got to break that up because it's so hard, well, then you're probably going to need something to go in terms of either lime or gypsum to then sort of keep it from going back to a rock. And then to go a step further, your choice of whether am I putting gypsum or am I putting lime is based on your pH. So if your soil is really, really acidic, and that's obviously not going to be a good thing because it's going to cause the plants to slow down in growth because they can't handle a lot of acidity. And so you want to put that lime on to bring it up, and that would change the soil by putting the calcium in, but also fix the pH. Now, if your pH is already where you want it or it's alkaline even, then you would go with the gypsum because you don't want to increase it anymore, but you just want to add that calcium to stop it again from going back to the brick.
I see. So those are very crucial elements that we have to consider. Is there any other basic elements that we should add to?
Yeah, definitely more, but those are just the two nutrient and managing calcium gives the overall soil environment. Like it changes where the soil is at and then sets up the rest to work.
Oh, yeah. I'm following you.
Yeah, it's the beginning. It's the beginning. And so definitely a bed prep, those are things to be considered. But otherwise, then there's your nitrogen and your phosphorus and your potassium, which is the typical NPK. You know, we're thinking in that regard, what does the plant need? Not only what the soil needs. That would be the normal, traditional way of thinking about it anyway. That's in regards, like a lot of materials would provide that. It would be compost or manures are basically a blend of NPK in different quantities.
Okay. So yeah, we have to consider treating the soil, and then we now have to consider how we're going to supply the nutrients for our plants.
Yeah. How are we feeding them? And we want to start them off to a good feed because we want to start them right from as early as possible to be running on a good meal, right? Because that's going to get them off to growing quick. But we want to make sure that's right.
So, you know, in order for us to know exactly what is in our soil and what elements we have in there, what do you think is the best way we can find it out?
So this is the issue. Like your soil and my soil are going to need different things.
Mm-hmm.
Mine is a sandy, it's a light sand. My neighbor's down the road is going to be a clay and so on. So what do each of these soils need? And you know, with experience, you can kind of see and you can work out, you know, and a plant can tell you and all of those sort of things. But if you want to skip that guesswork and just jump into it and just know, there is this like a soil test that basically tells you, look, this is where your nutrients are at and this is where they ought to be. And there's a gap, right? And you can work on that gap and say, that's what I need. It's like an assessment done for you rather than you having to work it out, because you can work it out. You know, you can plant a plant and you can see what goes wrong. And then you keep feeding it until you get it right.
Yeah. That's a long way around it, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a long route.
Yeah. So, I mean, to save your time, then it's probably a good idea to get it yourself, a soil test.
Yeah. If you can. But the general principle is if you're feeding what it needs, you're going to get a lot more outcome than if you're feeding with simply, this is what I've got, so I'm just going to put more on.
Yeah. I know there's that temptation that, well, I've got this, let me just use this and hope for the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes it's best to really inquire, you know, what's really my soil? And sometimes I like to think like the soil is like our heart, you know, and it's really, we think, well, my heart is okay, you know, but then if we really allow God to look into our heart and say, well, what do we really need, you know, and do that heart work and the character building that needs to take place in our lives, then sometimes we need to add another element that we haven't considered, you know, just like we need to add.
Exactly.
We need to consider a wider and have a broad understanding of what is needed in our soil, not just the NPK or not just the lime, for the instance.
Yeah, absolutely. You open a can of worms when you ask the question, what do I really need? What does my heart really need? And then you realize all these things that you never thought about.
Yeah, exactly.
It's exactly the same with the soil. You get this report back, or, you know, telling what it needs, and you're like, oh, wow. That's where it's at, you know. I'd add, you know, there's this, the consequences of adding the wrong things, or sometimes we add the wrong thing to compensate for the lack of the right thing. You know, I was working on this farm, and so the beds were 30 meters long and they had 35 centimeters wide, right? And they were putting about a centimeter to 2 centimeters thick of compost at least twice a year. Perhaps for gardeners, that might seem normal, but on a commercial operation, that added up to in the order of $40,000 worth of compost per year. That's a problem. That's a lot of money to be spending on fertility, on inputs, right? So basically they were putting on more and more and more because things were not growing. Well, there were some deficiencies in that soil, but compost wasn't fixing those deficiencies. So you're putting on more and more to maintain the amount of growth that you had before, and it's getting less and less effective. And that is the story of agriculture and fertilizers. It's putting on something, like it's very common in agriculture to overapply an NPK fertilizer to make up for another deficiency like calcium, another deficiency like one of the trace nutrients. But when we came in there and we had a look at it and said, no, hang on, let's assess where it's at and look at it and say, oh, hang on, the trace nutrients are messed up. We need to fix these. It needs some trace nutrients. It does not have the right amount of calcium. It is not where it needs to be. And we went in and put them on. And then afterwards, the compost rate got back down to a fraction of that. There was like one wheelbarrow for an entire bed, which ended up being, instead of like 40 grand, it was like 5 to 10 grand of compost per year, right? Huge saving in compost, and the crops are growing better and they're a lot healthier and all the rest of it. So we really want to be putting on what the soil needs and not an invention of what we have or what we want to use. Yeah. So that the other nutrients obviously are traces, but it's a bit difficult to correct them if you don't know where they're at. But normally people, if you don't have a soil test, you're really starting with that lime and gypsum, making a decision about which one you're applying, and then putting a form of NPK fertilizer, which could be just a compost. You know, that was the, you know, the basic traditional, relatively well understood by most gardeners already. That basic part of bed prep, of making the decision, this soil needs to be a little softer, so let's add a little more gypsum or a little bit more lime, and keep doing that as the years go by, and eventually you're in a position which is quite reasonable.
Good stuff, guys. I've really enjoyed this conversation. It's taken us a lot of places, from starting out with how many weeds should we be pulling out to what size bed should we be making according to the tools and equipment that we have available, and then even preparing soil and problem solving the different nutrients that we might have too much of or too little of. I really see some key overarching themes that have come out from this conversation though. One being that of foresight, thinking ahead, like what can we do now to prevent and limit problems in the future? So yeah, that was a really key thought. And another overarching thought that I picked up, especially towards the end that you guys have been sharing about, is the idea of problem solving and being detectives. Because it's one thing just to grow some food and follow a textbook experience, and another thing to learn and to make something really succeed. As I think about that, I'm reminded of having a packet, you know, packet meals from the supermarket, and there's specific instructions on them, right? And I know some people who like to read those instructions and follow them exactly, and they put it in the oven for the right temperature for the right time, and they pull it out exactly to the minute of the time it was meant to be in there, and it turns out perfect and it's great. But unfortunately, agriculture isn't quite as clean cut as that. There's a lot more variables that we're dealing with. And so the idea of, yeah, asking those questions and not just settling for mediocre, settling for, oh, it's not quite growing right, but whatever, we'll try again next time. But we really can ask those questions, and we can be detectives, and we can make the most of everything that we do. And so I really, really have been enjoying that thought come out here. But most importantly and ultimately, I really appreciate that thought you shared, Khan, about preparing our hearts being the most important thing. Because it's one thing to learn about the practicalities of how to actually plant this stuff and do the hard work, but it's another thing to have agriculture teach us lessons and really impact us in other ways than just growing us food. And so, yeah, I just really want to challenge all of you who are listening today to think about that. As we're preparing our soil, as we're preparing our beds, let's also think about preparing our hearts and how can we live our lives with the most impact, not just in business endeavors and agricultural pursuits, but in preparing our lives and the lives of those around us for heaven and for eternity.
Thanks for listening to the Cultivate podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you find us on Instagram, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our mailing list by the links below so you don't miss out. And if you have a moment, we'd love it if you could leave a review or tell a friend. See you next time.